This recording is copyright. IELTS Help Now Listening Practice Tests. Test 10. In the IELTS test, you hear some recordings and you have to answer questions on them. You have time to read the instructions and questions and check your work. All recordings are played only once. Now turn to Section 1. Section 1. You will hear a conversation between an insurance broker and a client. First, you have some time to look at questions 1 to 5. You will see that there is an example. This time only, the conversation relating to this will be played first.
Good morning, madam. Can I help you?
Actually, yes. I've just got a new flat and I'm going to move my things in tomorrow and I haven't got any insurance yet for my things. I'd like a quotation for my car insurance as well to see if you can give me a better deal. It's coming up for renewal soon, you see.
Fine. That shouldn't be a problem. Let's just take down some details. First of all, can I have your name, please?
Of course. It's Mrs. Norma Willis.
Good. That's Norman without an N, isn't it?
Yes, that's right.
So, Norma is the correct answer. Now we begin. You should answer the questions as you listen, as the recording is not played twice. Listen carefully to the conversation and answer questions 1 to 5.
Good morning, madam. Can I help you?
Actually, yes. I've just got a new flat and I'm going to move my things in tomorrow and I haven't got any insurance yet for my things. I'd like a quotation for my car insurance as well to see if you can give me a better deal. It's coming up for renewal soon, you see.
Fine. That shouldn't be a problem. Let's just take down some details. First of all, can I have your name, please?
Of course. It's Mrs. Norma Willis.
Good. That's Norman without an N, isn't it?
Yes, that's right.
And can I have the address that you're moving to, please?
It's Flat 8, Chepping Dean, 23 Dean Road, Westleigh.
Can you spell Chepping Dean, please?
Of course. Chepping is spelt C-H-E-P-P-I-N-G and Dean is spelt D-E-N-E. The name of the road, Dean, is spelt the same way too.
And what's the postcode there?
It's WE39HT.
Can I take a telephone number?
It will have to be only my mobile, I'm afraid, as I haven't installed a landline yet. My mobile is 07525 745 642.
Let's look at the car insurance first, quickly. I need the model, age, and engine size.
It's a 4-year-old Toyota MR2 sports car. It has a 2-litre engine.
Will it be parked in a garage, in a drive, or in the road?
At my present address, it's in the drive, but the flat that I'm moving into tomorrow has a garage provided, and tenants are not allowed to leave their cars in the visitor spaces, so it'll be garaged all the time.
Two more questions. The first is, do you have any no-claims bonus? And the second is, do you have any driving convictions?
I have 3 years no-claims, but I had a claim for a new windscreen this year, and I don't know if that will affect it.
No, that won't count. The no claims will stand.
Good. As for convictions, I have 3 points for being caught speeding 2 years ago.
Before the conversation continues, you have some time to look at questions 6 to 10. Now listen carefully and answer questions 6 to 10.
Right, let's have a look at the household stuff now, while the computer is checking rates for the car. So, what kind of flat is it?
It's a 2-bedroom flat.
Have you bought the flat, or are you renting?
I'm just renting it.
So, you just need some household insurance for your possessions.
That's right.
First of all, can you give me a list of all the things that you want covered by the insurance?
Yes. First of all, there's my electrical goods, like my hi-fi, TV, DVD player, video player, a couple of radios, a hairdryer, my laptop and printer. I've estimated all the values of the electrical goods. There are various DVDs and CDs too. It should come to about £2,500.
Anything else?
Yes, there's my jewellery. I've some necklaces, bracelets, rings and brooches that I inherited. They're all in different metals and with different jewels. I've got a list itemising them all here. I've also got a small strongbox which screws into the cupboard, so they're reasonably safe.
Anything else?
Well, just the usual kitchen stuff and clothes that I'd like to be included.
Okay, that's not a problem. Now I need to ask some things about the flat. What floor is it on?
Well, I wanted a first floor flat, but this is a ground floor one. I can use the garden with it, though.
Yes, but the premium will be a little higher, because of course a burglar finds it more difficult to enter a flat on the first floor.
Oh, I never thought about that.
What about safety measures in the flat?
Well, there are 2 different keys for the front door, and one of them is a deadbolt, so that's quite good. I've been to the local shop and ordered a burglar alarm too, which has a motion sensor and everything. It's not in yet, but it will be soon.
That's good.
The windows are quite new and all double glazed, so, like all new windows nowadays, they have extra locks on them, so that makes it quite secure.
That's good too. So really, it's reasonably safe. That will make a difference on the premium. Do you know if there's a smoke alarm fitted in that flat?
I never thought of that. I think it's the law now if you're renting, so there must be.
Well, that's about it. Let's look now. I've got 2 quotes for you. First the car, and then the household. £750 fully comp for the car, or £500 third party fire and theft. The contents is £100.
Does the contents cover me if I lose something or I'm robbed outside the home?
As long as it's in this country and on the list of items covered, yes.
Well, I'll keep the old car insurance as my present deal is better, and I'll take the contents. Can I pay by cheque?
Cash, cheque, credit card, anything you want.
That is the end of section 1. You'll now have 30 minutes to check your answers. Now turn to section 2. Section 2. You will hear a residence manager giving a short question and answer session to new residents. First, you have some time to look at questions 11 to 15. Now listen carefully to the question and answer session and answer questions 11 to 15.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Simon and I am the manager of this residence. Most of you here today are new in the town of Westley. Some of you are students at the uni, some have new jobs, and some have other reasons to be with us. When we have lots of new people staying with us, I do one of these little question and answer sessions so that I can help you settle in. So, let's get started straight away. Yes, over there.
Hi, I'm Margaret. I'm a student here. I was wondering where I can do my laundry. It won't be long before this is an urgent thing for me.
Here in the residence, we are planning a little laundrette beside reception, but this might take a little time to organise. In the meantime, there's a little laundrette down the road. It's in Queen's Avenue, the same street that the residence is in. You go about 500 metres up the road in the opposite direction to the town centre, and it's on the right. They have plenty of machines and dryers, and there's a lady there called Betty who does service washes. You just need to drop it off and it will be laundered, dried and ironed the next day. It's a bit more expensive, of course, but good if you're lazy. Another question?
Hi, my name's Jo. I've got a new job at the other end of the high street. I was wondering which the best bus was to go there.
The best bus for the centre of town is the 38. That takes you straight to the square. If you work at the end of the high street, though, that still leaves you with about a 10-minute walk. The 39 goes to the train station, which is very near the end of the high street. So that's your best bet, probably. The 39 is good for coming home late at night as well, because the station buses go on later than the other buses. There's the 35 bus too, for getting to the high street, but it goes to the near end of the high street, and it's a good 20-minute walk after getting off. Anyone else? You there?
I'm a student too. I'm new in the area, and I have to register for my council tax. Do you know where I have to go to register?
Yes, we get lots of people in your situation. You other students need to do this too. First of all, get the information sheet from the Students' Union, which has lots of guidelines on registering and the discounts you should get. The Students' Union is in Newbolt Street. I'm sure you know that. The actual putting your name on the list, though, should be done at the town hall, which is right next to the square. Some people are told that you can do it at the police station, but that's just the registration for non-UK nationals, not the council tax.
You now have some time to look at questions 16 to 20. Now listen to the rest of the short question and answer session and answer questions 16 to 20.
Any more questions? Come on, I'm sure you must have some more.
Yes, I was wondering what we do in the case of a fire here at the residence.
Well, the first thing to do is to raise the alarm by setting off the electric alarm system. Then, if the fire is not big, try and use the fire extinguishers that you'll find round the residence. If the fire is in any way large, just get out and go to the assembly point on the front lawn. Try not to go in the front or back car parks, as that's where the fire brigade will set up their stuff. You don't need to call the fire brigade, as our residence alarm is linked up to their system. Make sure you read the fire notices around so you know where the nearest fire escape is to your room. Don't panic and rush around. That gets people hurt. Just go briskly to the assembly point. Once every 6 months we have a fire drill which is attended by someone from the fire service to make sure we're up to scratch. One of these might be at night, so be ready.
Hi everyone, I just wanted to ask what time the TV room closed for the night. It's just that my room is just across from it and I don't want to be kept awake all night.
The usual cut-off time for the TV room is 11 p.m, though this is extended by 1 hour on Fridays and Saturdays. I know that some people want to watch late-night films, but then you'll just have to buy your own TVs for your rooms. If you do have a TV in your room, then please think of others and keep the volume down. We take a very dim view of people disturbing others in the residence. The same goes for the TV room itself. Just keep the volume levels down. Anything else from anybody?
I've got a question too, actually. I've got a job that will get me back late in the evening, and I won't always be able to eat. Are there any good places nearby that deliver food?
The quick answer is yes, there are lots of places. There is an Indian nearby. Fish and chips is sold in a shop that is funnily enough run by a Chinese family. There is a good Thai restaurant, a Mexican and an Italian pizzeria. They all deliver apart from the Mexican, but that's only 5 minutes' walk away. All the telephone numbers are up on the residence notice board. The first time you order from each of them, just ask them to stick a menu into the bag and you'll build up a library in no time. Now, let me tell you about...
That is the end of section 2. You will now have half a minute to check your answers. Now turn to section 3. Section 3. You will hear two students discussing a seminar report. First, you have some time to look at questions 21 to 25. Now listen carefully to the discussion and answer questions 21 to 25.
Hi Adrian, what are you reading?
Oh hi Nick, it's just an article on Australian immigration. I'm doing a report on it next week in a seminar for Dr. Ronaldson.
On immigration? That sounds exciting stuff.
Yes, it's not really very exciting, but there are some interesting bits.
Such as?
Well, for example, did you know that immigration to Australia first started over 50,000 years ago when the ancestors of Australian Aborigines arrived via Indonesia and New Guinea?
I can't say I did know that the Aborigines arrived in that way.
Exactly. It's not as boring as you might think.
Well, do you want to run through some of your ideas? I'm not doing anything right now.
That would be great. Thanks.
Fire away then.
Okay. Well, after the Aborigines, there was obviously a big gap until the next settlers arrived from London. Europeans began landing in the 1600s and 1700s, and the country was colonised by Britain in 1788.
Weren't the first colonists just criminals transported by Britain?
Britain certainly used the colony as a place to send their undesirables. The first colony was formally proclaimed as New South Wales on February the 7th, and this European settlement certainly did begin with a troop of petty criminals, second-rate soldiers, and a crew of sailors.
When did other people start arriving?
Immigration really sped up after the discovery of gold in Australia. The gold rush era, beginning in 1851, led to an enormous expansion in population all through the reign of Queen Victoria.
And did that continue strongly?
Not really. After the excitement of the gold rush died down, immigration slowed down considerably. The popularity of Australia as a place to go and live only really shot up after the Second World War.
Didn't that cause problems as well?
Yes. For a country that is well known today for its multicultural diversity and tolerance, Australia has had a checkered past. After the federation of all the Australian states, the White Australia policy was created to counteract flows of non-whites to Australia, and this policy became even more popular after the population push following the war.
How did the policy come about?
The origin of the policy can be traced back to the 1850s, when large numbers of Chinese immigrated to Australia to look for gold or to set up businesses such as restaurants. The Anglo-Australian population resented the Chinese, who were undercutting white labour prices. In response, the newly self-governing colonies introduced restrictions on Chinese immigration. By 1888, Chinese were excluded from all the Australian colonies, although those Chinese who were already in Australia were not deported.
And how long did it go on for?
The effective end of the White Australia policy is usually dated to 1973, when the Whitlam Labour government implemented a series of amendments preventing the enforcement of racial aspects of the immigration law. It had been fading for some years, though. Under the 1950 Colombo Plan, students from Asian countries were admitted to study at Australian universities. This trend continued when in 1957, non-whites with 15 years' residence in Australia were allowed to become citizens.
You now have some time to look at questions 26 to 30. Now listen to the rest of the discussion and answer questions 26 to 30.
What's immigration like today? I hear a lot about it in the news.
Yes, it's become a very important issue in politics. There are currently two immigration programs that allow permanent migration to Australia. They're the migration program and the humanitarian program.
What's the difference?
To be accepted into Australia under the migration program, a person must be a skilled migrant or sponsored by a family member that already lives in Australia. The Department of Immigration says that the migration program for 2004-2005 has 120,000 places available for migrants, with a strong focus on attracting skilled people and people who agree to live in regional areas of Australia.
What about the other program? What's it called again?
The humanitarian program. It's designed for refugees and others in special humanitarian need. One component of the humanitarian program is the offshore resettlement program, which assists people in humanitarian need overseas, for whom resettlement in another country is the only option. The other component is for those people already in Australia who arrived on temporary visas or in an unauthorised manner, and who claim Australia's protection. The Department of Immigration says that the size of the 2004 and 2005 humanitarian program is 13,000 places.
What about illegal immigration? Do you know anything about that too?
Just a bit. That's what I'm working on now. Illegal migrants under Australia's immigration laws are those who enter Australia without authority, overstay visas, work without appropriate approval, or have their visas cancelled. Australia's Migration Act in 1958 requires that all non-Australian citizens who are unlawfully in Australia be detained and that unless they are given permission to remain in Australia, they must be deported as soon as is practical.
Well, that sounds pretty good. I'm sure your presentation will be excellent.
Thanks. I hope so.
That is the end of Section 3. You will now have half a minute to check your answers. Now turn to Section 4. Section 4. You will hear part of an Earth Sciences lecture. First, you have some time to look at questions 31 to 36. Now listen carefully and answer questions 31 to 36.
Good morning and welcome to this Earth Sciences lecture. We've been looking recently at such phenomena as earthquakes, tsunami, volcanic eruptions and other natural occurrences. Today we're going to look at a lesser known feature of the Earth, which is known as the supervolcano. As the name implies, this is a volcano of a much larger size than what we normally imagine a volcano to be. The term supervolcano has no specifically defined scientific meaning. It is used to refer to volcanoes that have generated Earth's largest volcanic eruptions. As such, a supervolcano would be one that has produced an exceedingly large, catastrophic, explosive eruption and a giant caldera. A caldera being the gigantic crater that the eruption creates. Whereas normal volcano craters are measured in the hundreds of meters, a caldera can easily be as large as 40 or 50 miles wide. Around the world, there are several volcanic areas that can be considered supervolcanoes, such as Long Valley in eastern California, Toba in Indonesia, and Lake Taupo in New Zealand. There are also other large calderas in Japan, Indonesia, Scotland, and Alaska. Not all the calderas are active, though. Normal volcanoes are formed by a column of magma rising from deep within the earth, erupting on the surface and hardening in layers down the sides. This forms the familiar cone-shaped mountain we associate with volcanoes. Supervolcanoes, however, begin life when magma rises from the earth's mantle to create a boiling reservoir in the earth's crust. This chamber increases to an enormous size, building up colossal pressure until it finally erupts. An explosion like this could send ash, dust, and sulfur dioxide into the atmosphere, reflecting the sun's rays and creating a cold wave lasting several years. Crops in many areas would fail, and many species of animals and plants, including humans, would face extinction. The most recent caldera-forming eruption in the US was about 650,000 years ago in the northeast United States. During that eruption, ground-hugging flows of hot volcanic ash, pumice, and gases swept across an area of more than 3,000 square miles. The eruption also shot a column of volcanic ash and gases high into the Earth's stratosphere. This volcanic cloud circled the globe many times and affected the Earth's climate by reducing the intensity of solar radiation reaching the lower atmosphere and surface. Fine volcanic ash that fell downwind from the eruption site blanketed much of North America. This ash layer is still preserved in deposits as far away as Iowa, where it is a few inches thick, and the Gulf of Mexico, where it is recognizable in drill cores from the sea floor.
You now have some time to look at questions 37 to 40. Now listen to the rest of the lecture and answer questions 37 to 40.
It is little known that lying underneath one of the United States' largest and most picturesque national parks, Yellowstone Park, is one of the largest supervolcanoes in the world. Volcanic activity began in the Yellowstone National Park region about 2 million years ago. Magma rising from deep within the earth has produced three cataclysmic eruptions, more powerful than any in the world's recorded history. The first caldera-forming eruption occurred about 2.1 million years ago. The eruptive blast removed so much magma from its subsurface storage reservoir that the ground above it collapsed into the magma chamber and left a caldera larger than the state of Rhode Island. The huge caldera measured as much as 50 miles long, 40 miles wide, and hundreds of meters deep, extending from outside Yellowstone National Park into the central area of the park. Scientists have revealed that Yellowstone Park has been on a regular eruption cycle of 600,000 years. The last eruption was 640,000 years ago, so the next is overdue. The next eruption could be 2,500 times the size of the 1980 Mount St. Helens eruption. Volcanologists have been tracking the movement of magma under the park and have calculated that in parts of Yellowstone, the ground has risen over 0.7 of a metre this century. This means the magma is rising. Geologists have called for a task force to be set up to consider emergency management in the event of a massive volcanic eruption or super eruption. Experts say such an event would have a colossal impact on a global scale. The fallout from a super eruption could cause a volcanic winter, devastating global agriculture and causing mass starvation. One past super eruption struck at Toba in Sumatra 74,000 years ago and is thought by some to have driven the human race to the edge of extinction. Signs from DNA suggest human numbers could have dropped to about 10,000, probably as a result of the effects of climate change. The volcanic winter resulting from a super eruption could last several years or decades, depending on the scale of an eruption, and according to recent computer models, could cause cooling on a global scale by 5 to 10 degrees Celsius.
That is the end of section 4. You'll now have half a minute to check your answers. That is the end of listening test 10. In the IELTS test, you would now have 10 minutes to transfer your answers to the listening answer sheet.